60 years ago this spring, a young Reverend Jesse Jackson became the first executive director of a new group on the South Side, the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization. And that began a long record of activism, community organizing, and leadership. Well, this weekend, we're going to take a look back at COCO's history, and we'll also predict the future, or try to anyway. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. The Kenwood Oakland Community Organization recently celebrated its six decades of leaders and leadership, and we're going to talk about how that organization has evolved and where it's going as we go through the years ahead. Joining me via Zoom conferencing are COCO Executive Director Shannon Bennett and COCO Youth Organizer Tamara Wade, and I thank both of you for joining me. Shannon Bennett, the first thing I want to ask you is, do we know what it was that prompted people to actually create this organization? Or I guess it was really a melding of two organizations.
Yes, Craig. Thank you so much for having us. And the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization is a product of two women who right now are nameless, but are in our history books as the impetus for the creation of this organization. And it was actually the creation, the coming together of two communities, one Kenwood and North Kenwood. The South Kenwood is pretty, as you know, prosperous with the large homes where President Obama's home was. North Kenwood has historically been more impoverished and blighted. So these two women came together because their sons were in separate communities, North Kenwood and Oakland, and they reached out and worked with area clergy, groups like Community Renewal Society, churches like St. Ambrose and St. James. And those leaders came together with these two women, these two very, very strong women, and they formed COCO in 1965.
And its purpose was for obviously for the betterment of the community, but what were the first things that they were engaged in as they started?
Well, from what I understand and just learning my history about the organization, it's some of the same exact issues, unfortunately, that we gather around today. So COCO currently, we say we organize around five quality of life areas. That's youth investment, senior rights, affordable housing, and equitable education. But in that time, particularly, the neighborhood was suffering from white flight. And the neighborhood was changing over. And what was happening is that there were issues around abandonment of property, fires, some of the same things that happened to urban cities as neighborhoods shifted racially. And then there was poor quality education. And, you know, just a lot of the ills of urban communities that have been disinvested in, so violence. So they came together around some of the same exact issues that we organize around today.
And now, Tamara Wade, talk to me about the kinds of programs and activities for young people and how that's been evolving, you know, in your time there and in the time before you.
Of course. So there are plenty of opportunities for young people to grow and develop, you know, in our space and in our organization. One of our mottos is to really help and grow and develop leaders for like the next generation. So some of the things we have are like mentorship programs, like our Boys to Men program, which focuses on development and leadership in African-American males. And we have a similar program for our young women called United Sisters, which does the same thing. Right now, the Boys to Men program, you know, it's in Drake Elementary, Doolittle, and the United Sisters program is also in Doolittle and Mollison as well. And the Boys to Men, is in Pershing as well. So there are a couple of elementary schools in our areas that, you know, we focus on heavily in helping, you know, mentor and develop some of the young leaders there. We're also pretty connected with some of the high schools in our neighboring area, Diet being one of them. Of course, you know, the Diet Hunger Strike being one of Coco's campaigns, and the importance of keeping that neighborhood school. So it's good to kind of see programs like our youth council and Diet Now, and just the overall aspect of sustainable community schools in there as well, kind of trudging and keeping along some of the things that Diet wants. We have a boys, we have a Bronzeville NEA program that really focuses on aspects of trade, entrepreneurship, as well as tech. So these young men are able to navigate different pathways other than, going to college, because we always want to, put in perspective for our young people that there are so many opportunities and so many other things that, we can engage ourselves in. So that program pretty much nurtures to, do you want to create a business? Do you want to learn how to code? It's other avenues that, aren't typically available to, our people. So we kind of just have spaces, available for our young people, to help grow and develop them.
How much do you see excitement or the or among young people for these kinds of activities? I mean, sometimes young people can be kind of blasé about these things and think, well, that's not for me. But it sounds like with the kind of different offerings you have, that it could bring people to you.
That's a great question. So, we also have a youth council, and every year we do the Coco Fest. And, the youth are really invested in that, and they actually come together and pretty much plan the event themselves. So they come up with the activities, they come up with the food list, and then, they facilitate where they want things, how they want it to run, who's going to do what type of work. So I feel like their engagement and kind of investing in creating this space for the community through this Coco Fest that we have kind of shows how important these spaces are for them, and shows how they are influenced to want to be in those spaces and, navigate leadership and development through those. With our Boys to Men program and our United Sisters program, it was actually really funny because the Boys to Men program was kind of like first, and the young women would walk around the school and they would say, "We want a program for the girls. We want a program for the girls." And they were very adamant. I think one of the little girls even said, like, "Why isn't there a girls to men?" Kind of as a joke. But I think that it's really important to hear kind of like what the youth are asking for, and I think Coco does a very good job of listening, There are plenty of spaces where young people are not heard. And I think with Coco listening to the young lady saying, "Why isn't there a girls to men?" just shows the aspect of like how important these workshops and how important these programs are in these schools. And I think it goes to show how important, it is for the young people to have these programs where they can navigate having a space for them to, be free, to talk freely, to communicate, to grow, and to develop. So I think honestly, the young people really wanted it, and Coco has been very invested in allowing the youth to have leadership. So I think they love the spaces that are acclimated for them.
Excellent, excellent. Shannon Bennett, as a young reporter when I first got to Chicago, and that was in the early 80s, when I heard the name Coco, it was usually in connection with some kind of drive, whether it's an organizing or something like that. Now I know Tamara mentioned Diet High School. That's one of the more recent ones, but I think that's an example of the kinds of things that Coco does or has done. And that's a real success story, not just Coco, obviously. It was a really a citywide focus. But talk to me about how a success in something like that can help drive an organization, can help other areas.
Greg, you've been around us for a long time. You've covered our fights around Renaissance 2010, privatization of public education, the Mercy fight to save our oldest hospital. That was one of our most recent wins in the middle of the pandemic. And of course, you hit it on the head. Most of, not all of Coco's work, if not fully, was built in coalition. It's harshly coalition-based. You cannot win alone. Chicago's a city of broad shoulders and a city of neighborhoods, right? But as we love our great city, we have to understand part of how the other is created, and that even thought of the others created is through separation and division, through segregation. Dr. King stated when he visited Chicago that it was the most segregated city in the country, more than the South. So we are not far away from those times. It's just veiled differently. The tale of two cities. You can use whatever coin phrase you want to say. We're still not where we should be. So part of Coco's essence is first our people, our community members who are most impacted by the issues. They have not shaped the total agenda. They form the agenda. Not the staff, not the leaders, not myself, but the people's most impacted. Like Tamara said, there's not many spaces where young people have voice and are respected, but there damn sure are not a lot of spaces where Black voice really matters. So what we have done, and we've tried to carry on the long legacy and tradition of greats like Reverend Jesse Jackson, of Bob Lucas, Doug Gills, Karen Bozeman Gross. These are people that were there when I came to Coco at 19. As a student from Columbia College and never left. We have the opportunity to bring this city together to be our best self. When Chicago's at its best, it's summertime shy. It's the festivals. I love New York to death, but I would never replace New York with Chicago. But we have a uniqueness to us being in the middle of this state, I mean, of this country. We have to understand too, and our last thing I'll say about this to answer your question, hopefully I'm answering it, is that what keeps Coco going and what is the thread that goes throughout Coco? Here's our secret sauce. This is one tablespoon of our secret sauce. It's intergenerational connections, intergenerational shoulder to shoulder. Someone's great grandmother who's 80 years old rocking with a 16-year-old on a campaign or on a program or Coco Serve, which is our mutual aid project, where we delivered over 15,000 bags during the pandemic, and we kept it going. It's still going today. So that's kind of how I would answer that question. Hopefully I did a good job.
Yeah, and for both of you, being that you're from two different generations, tell me how or what is it that gets the 80-year-old person to be able to talk to the 19-year-old, 20-year-old person, and for them to be able to work together and see eye to eye without it being a gap. What brings that about?
We're intentional, Craig, and to jump in right after this, Tamara, I'm just going to say it first. We're intentional on some basic foundational principles and morals. Youth have to respect elders. Elders have to respect youth. It goes both ways. We have many of our elders and our seniors who have a lot of the things that Chicago seniors as a whole have, and I would say a pause if they see some young people walking down the street that they don't know. What we have developed in this neighborhood, not everywhere, not all the time, is seniors can say, I know that young man. That's something that we have intentionally tried to do in our practices. So when we talk about Coco, you have a place where you're going to have someone 60, 70-year-olds employed at Coco. They may be the receptionist. They may be doing some data entry. Then you have teenagers who rush to Coco after school. So they have actually developed relationships that then can be amplified when we go to the broader community and we talk about, which we know we have issues of, we have issues in our communities, like all communities, of ageism, classism, sexism. So if you exemplify it and walk the walk, it's more permanently changing a narrative and more importantly, changing a culture.
And so Tamara, let's flip it over from the other side now. How, what is it that gets young people to respect the elders and not think that they're just, you know, outdated and not having anything to say to them?
I think it's definitely the knowledge. I think that in a generation where you have all of these young people coming in and learning, I think that Coco being so intergenerational allows a space where they have, you know, the seniors to be the person to kind of go to gain some knowledge about. Just like our rent control campaign, it's things that like the seniors have been going through for generations. And now it's something that we kind of want to bring the young people into because they'll be the next generation of renters. They'll be the next generation of landlords. So I think it's having those spaces where you have these older adults being in the space where you can learn from them, where you can grow from them, where you can bounce and jump your ideas for them. I think knowledge is one of, kind of like the key factors of understanding your community and being in a space like Coco, where, like he said, you'll have youth employees, you'll have senior employees, you'll sometimes even have youth interns. I think it's important for those youth interns to kind of be able to bounce knowledge off of the senior workers. Who knows their community better than the people that grew up in it? And I think that's a very important factor and a very important thing for the young people to be able to kind of learn from their, senior counterparts.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Dellamore. We're talking about the iconic, now 60-year-old community group, the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization. My guests are COCO Executive Director Shannon Bennett and COCO Youth Organizer Tamara Wade. Shannon Bennett, we sort of mentioned some of the wins that COCO's had along the way, Dyett High School being, I guess, the one people would remember most recently. But what are the other ones that you would point to and talk a little bit about how significant those wins were that are, part of the landscape in that area?
Yes, that's Craig. You're hitting the points. As we just celebrated our 60th year at our annual convention, where we had over 500 people attend at King High School, let's start there. Coco was very instrumental in getting King High School to be developed because there was an overcrowded school called Forestville, and King High School was not even in existence. So Coco is foundational in the forming of King High School. That goes back to the 70s. Then you speed up a little bit, you go to the medical center in a time where we had groups like the Black Panthers and other groups that were talking about self-sufficiency, starting medical clinics. Coco started our own medical clinic called ComEd, which still exists today. The Kenwood Oakland Medical Developments Center, that's one example. Then you just keep moving. Coco had a large hand in making sure that that area was a destination for what they call conservation area, where all city-owned properties were put under a process where the elected official couldn't just give them away to developers, and also that there was a community say in what would happen for the development of parcels of land that were city-owned. Coco's to this day, that conservation council helped develop the area, but Coco was, again, foundational in its formation. You can go on to talking about the things we've done around economic development in our area. Coco's now coming full circle to come back into economic development. The last act that our great mayor, Harold Washington, did on the day that he passed was the groundbreaking of a Coco apartment complex called the Woodlake Townhomes, which still stands today on Woodlawn and 44th. It starts at 45th Street. But that was the last thing that our great mayor did, and then he went to his office back at and passed away. So there's famous pictures of the groundbreaking. So Coco has continued to be consistent. Coco has continued to not let its people down. Everything is now, of course, perfect. Coco has had challenges, like all organizations, but being the oldest Black-led community organizing organization in this city, if not the country, says a lot to making sure legacy and condition and tradition is continued. So the next generation of Coco leaders, they get this as part of their onboarding. They get this history. They learn about the people and they meet the people who are still here that help shape. So I was so glad that 2 years ago at our annual convention, Reverend Jesse Jackson was able to come and sit in the front row. And his son Jonathan did most of the talking for him, but we acknowledge who he was to the formation of Coco.
Yeah, and it was in preparing for this interview that was the first time I had learned that that he was the first director of COCO. So that was a revelation for me. One of the other things that I do remember COCO being involved in was the We Walk for Her March,
Yes.
which highlights a very serious and troubling ongoing problem in the African American community.
Craig, you're good. That's Tamara's lane of work. So you just brought her in. Tamara, please go ahead.
That was my aim. So Tamara, well, yeah, talk to me a little bit about that initiative and the fact that, I mean, there's still a need for it.
Absolutely. So, I have become very, very passionate about the work with We Walk for Her. I think that its story is amazing, and I think that, the campaign being an initiative just for, our young African American women and girls' voices to be heard is powerful in itself. The fact that the march started because a 13-year-old girl was concerned about the underrepresentation of African American women and girls in the media who had gone missing or who had been murdered just states to itself how important the issue is and how young people are in these spaces and they're seeing these things in their communities and they're able to see these injustices and they have a say so about what happens next. She went on Facebook and she made a status and she was like, I don't like that I'm not seeing our girls being mentioned. I don't like that I'm not seeing them in the media. And she kind of just addressed how she thought it was unfair that she'll see our Caucasian counterparts, being represented, but not us. And with her family already having like pre-existing connections with Coco, she was able to sit down with our executive director. And like we've pressed during this interview, it's very important for the youth to have a voice, and it's very important for the youth to know that they have a voice. So when she sat down with our executive director, he looked at her and he said, "What do you want to do?" And her response was, "I want to do a march." And the next upcoming weeks were planning, and it was kind of getting everything together. But on the last day of school, they did the march from 35th and King Drive to 51st and King Drive. And they were able to kind of show the importance of this issue of missing and murdered Black girls and women in the Chicagoland area. And I think for this year to be the 8th annual march really kind of shows the progression of the work. It shows how it's flourishing. It shows how we're making a statement. There are plenty of things that, we have been able to do kind of like accomplishment-wise, which is, there was a backlog of DNA and people's cases weren't being able to kind of be handled properly because of that backlog of DNA. So Coco was a part of a coalition of individuals that were able to bring Andy's Corporation, into the state of Illinois and really be able to kind of like figure out what was going on with that backlog and get things handled. So now because we have Andy's Corporation, which allows DNA to kind of be flushed out faster, it allows us to really come to conclusions about some of these cases of our missing and murdered Black girls and women. I think that, a lot of Coco's work has been focused on allowing African American girls and women who have been gone missing or have been murdered the opportunity to really be a pointed focus on, their cases. And I think some of the work that we're doing related to wanting to get this office open that will be specifically handling cases for missing and murdered Black and brown girls, is really important. We were actually able a couple of a month ago to go down to Minnesota, and they have an actual office dedicated to missing and murdered Black girls and women. So that exchange of information was really instrumental in kind of like getting a good idea of how to push this forward and kind of how to get one of the things that we feel like will be instrumental in, the way that not only the police handle our cases, but the way that the families are even, kind of communicated to about our cases as well.
Thank you, Shannon Bennett. I think clearly your leadership development program is working very, very well. I think Tamar is a prime example of that. What are the developing needs, aside from what she just pointed out, what are the developing needs in the South Side that need to be worked on as Coco moves forward?
I think we have so much apathy from the citizenry on engaging in civics, engaging in understanding not just electoral politics, but understanding how things get to be where they are. We have an opportunity because there's such a deficit of engagement to ignite the city. I look at it glass half full. If you look at it constantly, like we won't ever get better, Black folk won't stay engaged, or Black folk don't care, or Black parents don't care. That's why kids are downtown doing the trends. We're missing it. We're missing it. And what we're missing is that The innate ability of leadership is in all of us. It sometimes needs to be sparked. And in Coco, we spark it for the young, the old, it doesn't matter. And what we're doing is that we're able to show how transformation can happen at any point in your life. You don't have to wait, and you don't have to, be a certain age. So transforming individuals, which then leads to communities, is what I think the power in community organizing. And that's why a lot of times people who are opposing communities organizing themselves and finding their power, they don't talk about the power in it because what? It threatens the establishment. You know what I'm saying? So we really, I think, have opportunity versus challenges that we just have to sometimes reverse. Reverse what we see as a challenge and show that that's an opportunity to get to where we will and need to be, because obviously we have societal problems from the nation on down to the local. But guess what? If we always look for a boogeyman or we always look for a savior, we count ourselves out in that picture. We got one famous, everybody's heard of this quote that we love to do. We put this on the back of our shirts. We are the leaders we've been waiting for, Craig.
Well, and I just want to ask Tamara. Sometimes I think one of the things that people need to see are wins. In other words, they get discouraged because they think no matter what we do, nothing's going to change. But it doesn't have to. Tell me about, do we need to win or do we need to see progress or what is it that engages people? What keeps those young people talking to you and giving you the ideas and telling you what is needed?
I think it's the passion. I think that, the young people are very passionate about the things that are going on in their communities because they're growing and they're developing and they're seeing these things. So I think the passion of wanting to develop that aspect of change in their local communities is kind of really what drives them forward. I definitely think that you, of course, want to win. Like, who doesn't want to win? But I think with the young people, it's really about standing strong and making a statement. And I think that, one of the things that I like to tell a young, like to tell the young people is that if you were to walk out of the school right now, what would happen? And half the time they just look at me and I'm like, nothing. Because without you, there is no school. Without you to teach, who are the teachers teaching? And I think that, while they love, while people love to say that young people have no power, I think that Coco is a space that really, focuses on the power that the youth actually does have. And I think that while wins are great, the passion that the youth have related to their community, the passion that they have to want to make that change, and them knowing the importance of, being able to stand strong and to make a statement, I think that's really what kind of pushes the young people forward and making that change within their communities and being a part of, some of the youth groups that Coco has.
I think I'm going to let that young woman be the last word for this discussion, and I can't think of a more appropriate one. I would like to thank youth organizer Tamara Wade and COCO director Shannon Bennett for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage. You can also find our podcast on Audacy.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dellamore, News Radio 105.59 WBBM.